Chapter 8. Digging. I woke up beside Ambrosius. We were side by side in his stall. I suppose I fell in face first when I couldn't figure out how to get past my door. One of those bastards from the night before had cracked me a good one across the head, and I was still a little dizzy as I lay there beside my donkey, trying to piece the last few hours together. I climbed to my feet by way of the fence, rail by rail like a ladder, and leaned up against a post. The morning air was chill, and a fine mist hung over the ground. I watched it a while. I thought I could see it moving. The first thing a wise man, or at least an unrepentant drunk, does upon waking from a blackout is to check his purse, which is what I did. As expected, it was empty. I'd been rolled again. I thought about that, trying to decide if I wanted to be angry. They didn't get much, as I hadn't been carrying much. And yet that money was to have been the first stepping stone on the path of my rebuilt fortunes. I worked it over in my mind. A bit wasn't so much in the long run, wasn't so much to earn back, really. But it was my bit, damn it, and the loss stung as much as my loss in Plotzdorf. Ambrosius looked back at me long enough to smile and break wind like a stoic. I checked his barrel to see how he was set for food, discovered he wasn't set at all, and knew we'd have to go out again that very day. I dragged the cart from his pen and went to get my tools and the last sack of barley. I considered my situation as I prepared for the trip, considered how much it had changed lately. It used to be that digging ore was enough to get by. It didn't make me wealthy, but I've never needed very much, and it was easy to build up a little savings that could then be used to address certain needs. But now that Nix was in the game, my prices had been slashed, and pushing ore now only provided enough to keep me fed or drunk, but not both. And Ambrosius still had to be cared for. I thought of just killing Nix, but no, that was no good. I'm a nonviolent man, and Nix was so pathetic it was impossible to stay angry with him for long. Then I thought about just running him out of town. I stood there holding the spade in my hand like it was a spear, and imagined how it would be. I could follow him out to his place, wherever it was he went to dig. Digging was a thing you wanted to do out of sight, so you always traveled out a far distance from any community, out where the spaces were wide, open, and unpopulated. It was the reason digging always seemed to go best at the poles. There were so few of us living at either end. So I could follow Nix out to his spot where he would be alone, wait for him to get deep into the work, and then fall upon him. I'd probably have to beat him a bit to really get his attention, maybe bash him across the head with the spade. The beating would be a delicate business, I thought. I'd have to do it enough to really scare the shit out of him, but not so much that the poor fuck was truly injured. Then, when he'd had enough, I would snarl into his face and say many terrible things, and let him know that his days of comfort in the village were over, that I'd always be behind him, dogging his steps, there to jump out and brutalize him, always, until the day he left for good. This seemed like a very good plan. If anybody in town found out what I was doing, they wouldn't care. Nix was on my level, so far as they were concerned. Maybe even lower. One undesirable running another out of town wouldn't even register with those people, outside of a possible hidden gratitude for me saving them the trouble of having to do it themselves. I wondered if it was even necessary to follow him out to his dig site, and thought to myself, well, maybe you don't have to. Maybe I could jump him in the middle of the village in broad daylight, and the most reaction I'd get would be a few people coming out of their homes to watch the festivities. Maybe they'd place a bet or two. I thought it might be like that. And then, like all good fantasies, mine burst like a soap bubble. I wasn't going to brutalize Nix, and I knew it. All he'd have to do is look at me just the one time with those miserable eyes, and that would suck all the attack out of me. I don't know what it is about me, why I'm so deficient on a talent that the world seems to have in abundance. But I never have been able to lash out at a defenseless creature, not truly lash out to hurt it. A swat or a well-timed kick, yeah, okay. But an outright attack with real intent to harm and terrorize? I guess it was just another way in which I was not as good as everyone else. So killing him was out, and forcing him to leave was likewise off the table. After long enough thought, I realized the answer wasn't going to come from making Nix go away. I simply wasn't capable of enforcing that kind of change. Whatever I came up with, it would have to include him being left alone. I had Ambrosius out of his pen to crop grass as I considered these things. Now I hitched him up to the cart and led him up the road toward the mountain. The thought of me leaving the village crossed my mind, but I discarded it. I'd been moving city to town to village for years, picking up and leaving whenever my welcome had run out, if there had ever been a welcome to begin with. The village I lived in now, or then, depending on how you looked at it, was about as far north as you got, as far away from any real civilization as you could hope to be. There was nothing further away, nothing more remote. Not unless I wanted to turn and head all the way south, beyond Dithmar's realm and across the Mittlera Sea to the great land across, and pray to loving Frigg that the strange people there wouldn't slay me. It was so very far away, and my home was just right there at the foot of the mountain. It was just a walk away. The world had broken me down in very specific ways, until all that was left was hard and resilient. But for all the scars and calluses, I did not think I was tough enough to pick it all up and move again. I'd run all the way to Erda's Gullet to get away from people, for whom I'd never had any real use or liking. And here they were, still encroaching. I was cursed. I had no love for my fellow man, most often despised them as much as they despised me. And yet I still relied on them to make my living. I thought on that, on the nature of professions in general, and realized there was no profession in the world that didn't rely on at least two people interacting at some point. I became depressed, and after a while Ambrosius started nudging into my back to let me know I must walk faster. That would have been a fine thing, if I could find work that required me to interact only with animals. I could handle that all right. But the sad fact was that animals didn't deal in money, and the humans who so often shamed themselves with behavior less honorable than the lowest animal would deal in nothing but money. So, no killing Nix, no beating him to make him leave, and I just decided relocation was not an option. It looked like I was just going to be out of luck. I started thinking about Yost and the work he did, how he came around on his route, retrieved the sealed night jars from people's stoops, took them all out to a place far removed from prying eyes, and buried them. Maybe that was some action I could cut in on. Talk to a few people, figure out his prices, and then undercut them. I could alternate between digging up ore and burying other people's shit, and maybe I could make up a bit of the difference. It might be worth a try. Then, after more walking, I realized I didn't want to cut in on anyone's action. It felt somehow unclean to me. Beneath me, if you feel like having a laugh. I didn't like the idea of moving in on someone else's profession at all. It felt to me like we'd be two maggots fighting over the same corpse. I didn't want to fight over a corpse. I wanted to go find my own corpse. What I most needed was to find new ways to make money, ways the others hadn't considered. I don't know when it was that the realization came to me. It seems so often that inspiration comes from out of nowhere. One moment you're walking along, thinking about nothing in particular, or you're thinking about every damned thing in the world except the thing you need to be thinking about the most, and then wham, right to the side of the head. Ing sends her secret dream, and it's like a great raging fire burning behind your eyes. And it all seems so very clear. Well, not Ing, I guess. I guess I should say Erpicia. But I didn't know about that yet, when I was walking Ambrosius back to the mountain, so never mind that for now. The idea I had was very simple. Clay. At the time, we didn't have a potter living in our village. People got their pottery, their jars, bowls, dishes, and so forth, from a traveling merchant who passed through every few months. Pottery, and especially jars in general, were a critical part of everyday life, You put everything in sealed jars. Any salted meat you wanted to preserve, drinking water, cleaning water, ale, beer, spices, certain herbs. If you were a tanner, you kept certain kinds of fats or greases sealed up in a jar. Blacksmiths stored their flux and their crushed charcoal in jars, and everyone sealed their shit up in a jar to leave out for the rubbishmen. They were a critical tool, and there was no one in the village producing the damn things. We all had to wait for the merchant to come through and buy up as much as he carried, and it seemed he never had enough. Sometimes people would have to travel to nearby towns where they did have a potter and get more. Our village was very small, about the smallest I'd ever seen, but it seemed crazy we didn't have our own potter. I thought that maybe it was time we had one. The first barrier to my enterprise was pretty large. A potter is a skilled craftsman. It's not a job you just pick up out of nowhere. You need to apprentice under a man who knows his business, just like any sensible trade. It was not something I'd be able to pursue on my own. I didn't even have an idea where to start, whether I should get a kiln first or a wheel, or even where to acquire such things, or how much they might cost, or how to build them. It was clear I'd have to go hunt down a potter, maybe one who lived in a large enough town that he had some competition keeping his prices tamped down. I could spend some time talking to this man, after a shave and a bath, probably, and tell him how it was in our little village, how there was no potter to keep us supplied, how we had to wait on the traveling merchant, and how we sometimes had to journey to adjacent towns when we ran out of jars and could not wait for the merchant to return. Most importantly, I could tell him how there was already a digger establishment in that village just waiting to keep him supplied with good, rich clay for as long as he wanted to live among us. It sounded to me like a wonderful opportunity, like I had found a way to create my own corpse to abuse as I saw fit. The first thing to do then was to go out and establish a good source of clay. It did me no good at all to hunt down a likely candidate and lure him back home without first confirming there was enough stock to keep him active. I scratched Ambrosius behind the ears, and he blustered happily. We smiled at each other, quite content, and walked along. We walked north out of habit, and pretty soon I could see the foot of the great mountain when the road, trail really, straightened out. I led Ambrosius off the trail then, diverting west toward the Ruhr, whose source was a crack in the mountain wall. Ambrosius resisted at first, having become accustomed to easier travel along the hard-packed, rutted dirt. But I coaxed him along. He eventually agreed to follow me, being the good old boy he was. Then the ground became lumpy as we went, thick at first with large hanks of grass. Before long, the trees pressed in closer, with roots that squirmed up from the dirt and twisted and plunged. All of it was a holy bitch for the cart's wheels, and my old donkey snorted often, letting me know in his own way that I was definitely an idiot for taking us off the trail. I worried about the return trip if the cart was laden with clay, and put the thought aside. No sense worrying unless I found the stuff. I made a little camp on the riverbank at midday, with a patch of dirt scratched out for a fire pit and another cleared of twigs and leaves for my bed. I put Ambrosius on a long lead where he could reach the grass. Then I crept down to the riverbank to see what the Ruhr had to offer. Well, the first thing I discovered was that the Ruhr offered quite a lot of noise so close to her source. I'd never before noticed how loud it was, having spent most of my time up in the mountain, but I'll be damned if that water wasn't just screaming as it rushed by. Later on, much later it turns out, I would learn why it moved with such force, the mechanics behind hydraulic force, jet mining, all that. At the time, I only understood it was so loud that I could scarcely hear my own voice. The banks were steep, and I had to take great care when I lowered myself down the side. I could swim, though most people I knew couldn't. But looking at that rushing current, I knew I'd probably just be pulled under the surface and never see Sunna's light again. I had my spade buried up at the top of the bank a good span away from the edge with a length of old rope tied fast at the base. The other end was wrapped several times around my wrist, tied off, and clamped in my hand. I dangled myself fully off the bank's edge, weight held only by the minuscule toehold I was able to find, and that rusted old spade. The hand bound up in the rope was level with the grass-lined top, and when I looked down, I could see there was another 10 fusa or so to the roaring white froth below. I tried to ignore the view and began to chip away at the soil with a rusty knife. Clay reveals itself to you first by the color, second by the touch. You're looking for anything gray, either dark or light. Brown is no good. There's brown clay out there, sure, but it is generally of poor quality. The pure stuff presents a gray, sometimes crumbled all the way down to dust. There was a great deal of the crumble running down the side of the bank. It was falling away in clumps as I scrambled along on the slope. I didn't want to take any of that crumble, though. The crumble was always mixed up with sand, gravel, and other impurities, and was no good at all unless you washed and separated it thoroughly. The way I looked at things, any effort I had to put into cleaning the hall was money lost. On the other hand, that crumble suggested there were fatter deposits buried beneath the surface, and that is what I dug for. After sight, clay reveals itself through touch. It is very smooth and soft, like velvet, which is the grain breaking away and rolling under your fingertip. It's easy to miss if you don't know what you're looking for. Anyone that hadn't spent his life rooting in the soil would just think he was looking at another rock, but that rich color is a dead giveaway. Then, if you can take it in your hand, squeeze, and break it into fragments, it's a good bet you're not dealing with a rock, isn't it? As I chipped away with the knife, I searched for what we call the stone. This is pure, prime clay, the best you can find, compressed into huge deposits. Many are as big as your leg, and sometimes, when your luck is with you, you'll find clay stones as big as an adult hog. I've even heard stories of stones larger than a horse, though I'd never encountered such a thing when I was still digging. I didn't find a horse stone on that day, that's for sure, but luck was with me all the same. The hand bound up in the rope was only beginning to hurt when the first dirt collapse happened. The soil fell away, starting at my chest and continuing all the way down to the water, and whatever it was I stood upon went along with it. I dangled there a while by my hand, blessing Godin for giving me the wisdom to bind up the rope such that it would not release my hand if my grip failed. It began to cut into the flesh beneath my thumb like a bitter whore, but I was elated just to continue breathing air. I kicked around until I again faced the bank, which looked much more like a cliff when I was right on top of it, and reset my feet. I stood just enough to take some of the pressure off my wrist, wincing as I felt the rocks under my feet threaten to give way again. Then I opened my eyes and saw one great, solid knob of clay jutting from the ground, pointing right at my chest. It was so dark as to be nearly black, and along its side, I could see the many layers that comprised it. Streaks of orange ran through cracks along the outside edge, probably rust from bog iron, and it appeared to get bigger as it plunged deeper into Erda. I ran a thumbnail along the top and left a small pile of gray-white powder. I winked at my new find and hauled myself carefully back to the grass. I lay there looking up at the tree branches overhead and planned. I decided to mark out a spot about 8 fusa away from the bank's edge to prevent the whole side from collapsing under me while I worked. Then I'd cut through the grass, roots, and topsoil with a pick and come after that lovely deposit from the other side. I didn't eat anything that night. My food was limited, and I wanted to save it for when I needed the most strength. I'd have a good breakfast the next morning, hopefully a good mind-clearing shit, and then take everything I could get. I built up a fire before Zintgund came and leaned back against the trunk of a great oak tree. When the chill came, Ambrosius ambled over to me, rolled over onto his flank, and rested his head across my lap. I let my head fall, and stroking my friend across the muzzle and across the neck, I found sleep. I marked a big, jagged X in the soil with my spade before taking up the pick. It was a ritual I often performed, like a good luck charm. It was as if I was signaling to Erda my intent to find something useful under her skin, and that she'd better damned well have something waiting for me when I got there. I was going to penetrate her with my pick the way I penetrated my women. I was going to extract her secrets, ready or not, and if I moved quickly enough, I might forget all the times they'd been extracted from me. And it was easy to forget when you dug, as easy as drinking or dying. Your mind went away when you swung the pick, when you cut with the spade, when you jammed your fingers into the guts of Erda and clawed and pulled. The mind wanders when you dig. It is a good thing, but also dangerous. Sometimes mine took me to the places I wanted to go. The next drink, the last time I'd slept in a warm bed, the last hot meal I'd had, the last great lay, the last conversation that hadn't ended in a con. On its own, my mind would dream of getting ahead in the world, of finding a slice of my own comfort. Not extravagant, like a rich man's life, but maybe a real floor instead of dirt, a softer bed with a clean blanket, or finer food free of grit or mold or worms. I'd think about the next big haul, and sometimes I'd tell myself I'd quit drinking for a while, long enough to save up some real money and get myself some of those nice things everyone else had. I'd think these things before I came to my senses. Other times, my mind went to the darker places, as it did that day while I cut away at the soil, driving deeper and deeper, looking for that good claystone. My belly felt good from the breakfast, but I was sweating for some reason, and sometimes my hands would shake. It made me angry, my hands shaking like that, like it didn't matter what I told them to do, they were just going to keep on doing whatever the fuck they pleased. It seemed an inexcusable betrayal in a world that had been betraying me since I drew my first breath. I began to drive the pick harder, sending it deeper than I should have, and when the soil wouldn't release it, I was enraged. I fought the handle from the ground viciously, cursing and spitting as I yanked on it. I felt the trees all around me in close, shielding me from the possibility of a refreshing breeze, and I cursed them as well. I thought about the long line of people who'd entered and exited my life, oftentimes staying only long enough to take a shit on my head before scampering off to wherever they'd come from. I thought of Nix and Stavka, of the guards at the flower, of Gerlin, and of the whore at the five-legged dog whose name escapes me even now. I thought of the children that laughed and threw stones as I took my cart along, and of the cities from which I'd been driven. I was sent ever north, city to city, and town to town. Be gone, ye undesirable bastard. Get ye away from here. It does not matter where you travel as long as it is away. I thought of my old master, the blacksmith to whom my mother had given me long ago when my father died and she could no longer care for my brothers and sisters and me, and who had probably gone on to whore herself, to be fucked senseless by men like me. And maybe I'd even fucked her once. Godan knows I've had my share of hags. But not until later. Not until I'd grown. Not until well after my master had taken my face in his hands and said those words, when he said, "Open your mouth, boy." And again later. And again. And again. And again. And later again. The pick handle ripped in two when I was waist deep in the dirt. Slowly. Like a tired thing that had simply given up. I cast the end of the handle away and held what remained by the splintered end, chewing away at the darkness in sad little swipes while my back ached and my hands bled. When the hole was deeper than my height, something had changed. I'd forgotten about the claystone, the end of which jutted out from the dirt toward my face. I had passed it some time ago and continued to dig downward without thinking. Continued to dig downward while thinking about everything. I thought about the world and my place in it, about the looks and the sneers given me by the wives of the husbands I supplied, and how they put their heads together and sneered more as I walked away with their fucking money and laughed and said things I could not quite hear. The only thing separating me from them was my profession, I thought. Put that aside, and the main difference between us was that one had apprenticed successfully with the craftsman, while the other had been cast away like a lump of useless shit, consigned to find his way any way he could. I thought about the Dvergas, and how just the thought or mention of their presence was enough to make the balls of most men suck up past their assholes, and how it was that fear, that cowardly fucking fear, that held me down to Erda's skin, pinned beneath their boot heels. The fucking Dwergas, whom those cowards had never before seen, but still feared enough that their rumor reduced me to less than a lump of useless shit left on the side of the road. I ate nothing for dinner that night, and it was a long time before I found sleep. I awoke before dawn and kept going. I don't know when it had changed from digging for clay to digging to challenge whoever would stop me, but I was well past the stone. I had to climb down into the hole using the rope from before and hang a lantern on a stick that I'd driven into the muddy wall. I was still able to throw each shovelful out of the hole and somewhere onto the grass overhead, but I was now deeper than the roots of any tree, the soil black, and there was a puddle of water up to my ankles. And I continued to dig. I dug until the day found me, when I could put out the lantern and return it to the cart, until I could no longer throw the dirt out of the hole and had to pull it up a bucket at a time instead. At midday, I stopped long enough to have a cold lunch of slimy, congealed porridge, and when I finished that, I tossed the dirt bucket out into the Ruhr and pulled it back up by the rope. I drank some of the water, spitting out whatever sediment I hadn't swallowed, and dumped the rest over my head. Head to toe, I was caked in mud and grime, until I thought I might look like a Dwergas myself. I climbed back down into the hole and dug. I dug until night came, and then I brought the lantern back and kept going until the morning found me. Progress became very slow between having to pull mud up by the bucket and how tired I became. I felt hot much of the time, but then also cold, so cold that I shivered, and then later again hot enough that the sweat was running pink tracks through the muck caked to my skin. I remember being very thirsty, and yet not wanting to stop, so that at one point I pulled a handful of the muddy water at my feet to my mouth, tried to swallow, gagged, and spat out the rest. Then I vomited into the wallow, steaming yellow mess swirling in streamers around my ankles in the water, and still I continued to dig. Sometimes I think digging will be the last memory I'll have before I die.